yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Boring.
Hey, one thing the game needs is more people like you. You.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
This is Daniel Bard.
It's Steve Aoki.
Here's Saul Tillamacchia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball
isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
Fly ball, deep left field. Back goes Alvarez. That's gone! Second time today, Manny Machado has left the building. That's 29 of the year for Machado.
There you go, Manny Machado. Second home run of the game. Don Arcillo with the home run call of the day. What a way to start the day. We thank everybody for listening, everybody for subscribing, everybody for following at BB Isn't Boring. Thank you to Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage, Wasabi Technologies, for walking side by side with us. We've had a great week, and we're going to continue to have a great week. And as we head into crunch time, and it is absolutely crunch time, you're talking about three series left for all the teams after today. Well, as we head into that, it's still only going to get better and better and better and better and better today. And today is a perfect example of that. We have a great podcast, a great sit down with a really, really important person, a really important player, and also another important player, two important people. Let's talk about the Dodgers trade deadline. What should we? Yes, we should, because they are 3.5 up on the San Diego Padres, the red hot San Diego Padres. And if they did not have these two players who are on the podcast today, they would not be 3.5 up games on the Padres. And the people I'm talking about, of course, Michael Kopech, who has become their closer, the Los Angeles Dodgers closer, and Jack Flaherty, who's become the Los Angeles Dodgers number one starter. Let's talk about Kopech for a second, okay? So with the Dodgers, he's pitched 19 innings, given up just 2 runs. In case you don't know about math, that's an 0.95 ERA, an 0.74 whip, 24 strikeouts, again, in those 19 innings, and that's 19 games. And he's just been absolutely nailed. So I sit down with Kopech for an extensive interview where we talk about a lot of stuff about his journey, about his path, about how different it was going from the lowly White Sox to the Dodgers. All of it. We've sat down with Kopech before, and it's been awesome, and this was no exception. It's really, really insightful and honest conversation for a guy who's at the top of the list when it comes to the most important player acquisition to the deadline and guys heading into the postseason. And then we're going to cap it off with a shorter conversation with Flaherty. Flaherty has become, you know, he became more of a luxury hour. He was thought to be more of a luxury item coming in the deadline. Yeah, you need a starter. Okay, you're going to get a starter from the Detroit Tigers, who, by the way, now just a half game out of a wild card berth. Pretty incredible surge. But they trade Flaherty, and Flaherty goes to the Dodgers, and boy, it's worked out for whatever reason for both teams. And Flaherty, he has let's see what he has. He has a 3.25 ERA over 44 and a third innings. He's 5-2 with the Dodgers. But when you talk about starting a playoff series, game one, it's starting with Jack Flaherty. And the other great thing about this podcast, about these two guys, is that both of them are products of the first round in the 2014 draft. And you go to the 33rd pick, that's Michael Kopech. You know who the 34th pick was? Yeah, it's Jack Flaherty. Both high school pitchers, Kopech out of Mount Pleasant in Texas, and Flaherty out of Harvard Westlake in Los Angeles. So back-to-back guys, and here they are. They've both landed with the Dodgers. And they're going to come up in a later podcast we're going to be doing as well with Brent Honeywell. Those three guys were the top of the top, tippity top of the pitching prospect list just a few years ago. And now they've all landed, done their journeys. Now they've all landed where they've landed. All right, well, let's get to the nuts and bolts of this podcast. And really, that is the sit down with Michael Kopech. It's a really, really, I was looking forward to talking with Michael, having talked to him about a year ago or so. Obviously, he's with the White Sox, but I was literally looking forward to talking with him, and he didn't disappoint. All right, so first up, Kopech, and then we're going to give you Jack Flaherty. All right, there's no human being I'd rather be talking to right now than Michael Cope.
I appreciate it.
Fact. Man, it's always good to see you. We haven't talked a little bit. I can remember we sat in the dugout. You were definitely wearing a different uniform.
Yep.
But, you know, even at that time, I'm like, I knew good things were coming.
Yeah, I was hopeful. I don't know if I knew. I knew that I needed a change, whether that just be a mental change or what have you. Change of scenery ends up being a big deal, though. So I'm definitely glad to be where I am right now.
When did it – and this is a knock on – you know, listen, you were with the White Sox since 2017.
Yeah, 16. Like off-season 16.
Off-season 16, 17. Yeah. It's a long time.
Yeah.
And so sometimes this is literally what it is, right? It's just – I just – nothing against – everyone's working hard. I have a lot of friends here. I just need a change.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know, like, if that was sort of – you probably at some point you don't want to admit it, but it's in the back of your head, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I ever was like, you know, if I get out of this uniform, I'm going to be a better player. Like, it was never that type of mindset. It was more of I've been feeling this monotonous feeling of – having a glimpse of success and then struggle, having a glimpse of success and then, you know, repeating the same cycle over and over. And eventually, you know, you lump everything into the same cycle. So the same spring training, the same, you know, subpar season, everything becomes, you know, kind of clouded in one. And I think that became my relationship with being a Chicago White Sox, so to speak.
When you have the good times, because you had good stretches, man, then is it in the back of your head, like looking back at now, it's like, wow, it's good, but there's always something around the corner? I don't want to play amateur psychologist, but...
like, I mean, it kind of, though. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't necessarily like I was expecting things to go wrong. It was almost like I had a death grip on the good things that were going on, and I so desperately didn't want them to leave that I started pressing harder and pressing harder, and then, you know, the more you try, the worse you usually do in this game. It's a really finicky game that way. Like, you have to go out there and compete, but more than anything, you have to play free, and if you're not playing free, you're going to get beaten down.
When was the besides now, when was the freest you felt?
I would say probably 21 when I came back, because I felt like I came back on my own terms. I had opted out of 20. I got my mind right. I had gone through some personal stuff. I got to spend a lot of time at home for the first time in a long time. And when I came back in 21, I felt pretty free. But, I mean, part of that, too, was playing winning baseball. You know, like, that was the last time I was on a winning team. And, you know, since then, I've been on three consecutive losing teams until I got over here, and now I feel that way again. So it's really the chicken or the egg conversation. Like, do I feel free because we're playing winning baseball, or do I feel free and that's helping me play successfully? But either way, I think they do go hand in hand.
You know, it's funny you mention it. Again, I did not mean to, like, I don't know what I'm talking about. So I'm doing a book with Daniel Barr.
Yeah.
And the premise of it is that he was at the height of heights. You were probably too young. I mean, you were like in elementary school when he was throwing 100 and nobody was throwing 100.
Yeah, right.
But still, he's throwing 100, doing really well, and then he gets the yips. And then for 7 years, he's chasing because he knows like how awesome it is to feel like how the awesomeness.
Yep.
Right? And so you know, believe me, I saw you way back before the White Sox being awesome.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the thing, though. You know how what it's like to be awesome. So you're probably always chasing that, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
I had a glimpse of like super prospect status coming up that you saw, and that was like, you know, it put these pictures or ideas in my head about how great the future could be for me. And in a way that hindered my progress, because I was always chasing a version of myself that I didn't really know, instead of just going out there and being myself as authentically and as well as I could be. And I think part of me is getting back to that just now, some 10 years later. But it's a, like I said, it's a real finicky thing that we do when we're out there playing, trying to find that flow, so to speak. But that's a part of it.
They go back to, like, where was the highest you got? Not that, like, that you put it, like, you've documented this, but everyone pays attention to, like, rankings, right? What was the highest you got in ranks? Do you remember?
I don't know exactly what the number was.
It was top 10, right, though? Like,
I think somewhere around there. I think I was, ironically, I think I was the number 2 pitching prospect, but behind Honeywell.
Oh, you were?
I didn't know that.
Oh.
Yeah, because we were both in, actually all three of us, him, I, and Jack Flaherty, were in the Futures game here together.
In Miami. Yeah.
So that was the last I really remember the ranking stuff. I think it was something.
And the reason I bring that up is because I've talked to guys. I just talked to Jackson Holliday about this.
Yeah.
Like, it's a blessing and a curse. Actually, right? I mean, it's like, you don't want to pay attention to it. It's no big deal. It's, you know, when you're out there, nobody. But it's not how the other team's viewing it. It's how you're viewing yourself. That you're being told, hey, you got to be that, right?
For sure. A part of it, like you said, it's a blessing and a curse. A part of it's helpful. You know, you don't have to try to find confidence in yourself because everybody's so confident in you. That's helpful, right? But then after a while, it's like, if I don't live up to these expectations or whatever, like all the noise that comes in the background.
And you're young. I mean, like, you're young when this is happening.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
It's not for like, sure. How old are you now?
28.
Yeah, but if you're not, you're 18, 19. Yep. It's 10 years ago.
Yep. And almost the naivety in me at that age was helpful, too. Like, I didn't really understand the pressures until I actually had to live out the pressures. And then it was like, oh, I need to be this, I need to be this, which just became a distraction to my actual performance. Is like,
when was that? The trade? The trade? Does that mean, like, was that?
I think it was, yeah, maybe. Maybe not the year after I was traded, maybe the following year, because I knew I was getting a little bit closer to the big leagues. And I went through a little bit of the thing, the wise, you know, in AAA. But, you know, bouncing back from that, coming back from that, it kind of got my mind right, got me ready to compete again. And I had some really good teammates that helped me through that stuff, too. But that's what it really came down to, is, like, being a guy in the clubhouse, being a good teammate, being a friend, having guys around. I was just talking about this guy yesterday, so I feel like it's on my heart to really bring him up. But Dustin Garneau was a guy that I played with in AAA that really kind of helped prepare my mindset for the big leagues. And then I only had a glimpse of, like, a cup of coffee right after that, and then I sat for 2 years without playing in the big leagues. But I'll always cherish that little bit of time I had with him, because I think it helped prepare me.
I was literally going to ask you, like, if who was the guy. Like,
yeah.
Because there's always someone who's, like, sticks, you know?
Yeah, he was incredible for me. I mean, he ended up being a guy that just was like, look, throw the ball with conviction through me. I'll present it as a strike. You don't worry about if it's a strike or not. We're just going to compete. And then because of that, like I said, I was battling throwing strikes at the time. But I think from the time he talked to me at that point, I went like 30-some-odd innings without a walk, which was probably by far the longest of my career.
Yeah,
it really helped to get my mindset right.
Is there – we're going to get to your awesomeness in a second. But in the time – like, you've hit, you know, highs and lows and everything else.
Yeah.
In the time of lows, when you're going through a lot of stuff, was there any time where you're like, oh, this baseball thing, I just don't want to do anymore? I mean, you're young, and, like, I'm not saying – but even – I've talked to guys that – even in their 20s, who are like, this man, it's just a lot of stuff wears you down, right?
In the minor leagues, I think I went through a lot more of that. You know, the early setbacks, you know, the broken hand and all that, when I was with the Red Sox, that was stuff that was tough for me to really battle. Once I got to the big leagues, it's just the struggles were brutal, because I wanted to have success, I wanted to win, and I wasn't helping the team win. But I found out years ago, after feeling like I might not want to play, that I still really love this game. I don't like all the chaos that comes with it a lot of times, but I truly love this game, and nothing ever, you know, nothing's going to make me want to walk away from it other than, you know, if it's that time. Well, hopefully I'm nowhere near that.
No, listen, listen, you're not. But you're that good at something, it's also it's a lot of fun. It's fun winning. It's fun being good. So as this year is going on, I don't know if they talk to you, if the White Sox talk to you, if you like, and you've probably been asked this before, but as it's just sort of leading into it, if you have an idea what's coming down, if you thought you were going to get traded, what was that like?
Yeah, I don't know if I expected it early. You know, when I got moved to the bullpen, I thought that might have been a sign that it could be on the rise. Just because I knew that my value as a starter was kind of taking a dip with the struggles that I had had the past couple years. And then with my velo coming back and going back to the bullpen, I knew I could be valuable in the bullpen for a team that was competing. And, you know, once the woes started to come with the White Sox, I kind of felt it on the rise. I didn't really know if it would happen or not, but I knew it was a possibility. And then, you know, once it started getting close, it started feeling more.
Where were you when you when the? I always like to ask that.
I was on the way to the park. I was headed in. Honestly, I was about 15 minutes away, and Chris Getz gave me a call and told me, he's like, "Hey, it's not official yet, but I'm moving."
Okay,
to
so when you hear Dodgers, when you hear, what's the first thing? Like, it doesn't like, oh, well, you know, winning it. But you live.
I live in Texas now.
No, but you have
I stayed in
LA. So I don't know if it's like, oh, I get to go back to this restaurant. I don't know. Like, what's the first thing that goes through your head?
You know, I don't really think too much about the city because, to be honest, I don't get to explore the cities very much. Yeah. I kind of wake up and I go to the park, and this is where I spend most of my time. But, you know, reuniting with Joe, reuniting with some guys I've, you know, played with here and there in the past, but also knowing what kind of team this was, you know. MVP, 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 All-Star, All-Star, All-Star. Like, I knew it could be really special, and I just wanted to contribute. And so getting over here, there was a little bit of nerves and excitement, but it was more so excitement than anything.
So, you know, there's certain teams where you ask, like, how do they do this? Like Tampa, we've gone through, like, what's the secret sauce? And they're like, throw the ball over the plate for strike one, right? Yeah. But, you know, we've obviously had Brazier on a bunch, and you know, his story from a year ago. So the Dodgers are one of those teams that sort of are able to get the most out. And I don't know what it was. Like, what was that development progression like for you when you got to the Dodgers? What did they say to you, and what have they implemented with you?
To be honest, it's been more of just them telling me, your stuff is really good. Trust your stuff. For a minute, there was, you know, we had talked about, you know, mixing in more breaking balls, and that's still a topic of conversation. But the main difference has been throwing everything with conviction. My fastball usage is kind of varied this season, but it's back up pretty high right now. And just throwing my fastball with conviction, trusting that it's going to be hard for guys to really do damage with, has made a huge difference for me. But also, like, we played around with some things as far as, you know, how to clip a good slider. And, you know, I've shown some success with that pitch, but my number one pitch is always going to be my fastball. And them believing in that and having me, like, you know, really trust that pitch has been...
Isn't it amazing, like, what you're saying, exactly what I said with Tampa, which was, like, sometimes it just hits different.
Yeah.
Like, hey, listen, sometimes it's just that reminder of, like, you got good shit. Like, you're, like, good.
Yeah.
Like, it's sure. Okay. Just throw it.
For sure. And, you know, sometimes I think conversation that I've had recently with Bardo, our bullpen coach over here, is just don't be too careful. And I think I got caught up in that so much with the White Sox, is like trying to be too careful, trying to be perfect, trying to not make a mistake. And you know, when you're thinking about all these, you know, like don't be bad, don't be like these double negatives, it doesn't serve you in any way. So it became more of, the best way I can describe it is pitching offensively. Like, yeah, I want the hitter to be defensive. I don't want to be defensive on the
mound. Yeah, you want to do it on your terms.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, which is, again, you probably early, like, guys just lose sight of that.
Yep, absolutely.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's a hard game. You know, yeah. There's good hitters in the box, but if you ever feel like you're trying to work around a hitter, I think it's like sharks smelling blood in the water. Like, they see you kind of showing weakness, they're gonna attack. So for me, it's just, you know, trying not to show that weakness, or when I when I feel myself kind of dipping into that, like resetting and just attacking after that.
Do you like the adrenaline of like the bullpen thing?
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't feel like I was getting a whole lot of that with the White Sox, and I don't know if it was necessarily because of our record or anything, or just because I had gotten too used to being over there. Like, as crazy as it sounds, I was one of the longest tenured White Sox, so I don't want to say I became complacent, because that wasn't it at all, but I felt just part of the field at that point. And now with a team competing every day to clinch for a spot in the postseason, you know, hopefully get a good position or what have you,
yeah.
I just feel like every single pitch I throw is mattering that much more.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. All right, last two things. It has nothing to do with anything. Candy corn, yes or no?
Candy corn. Oh, like the...
Yeah.
No. I don't know. Some people love it. I can't stand it.
All right.
Yeah.
Math?
Do I like math? Like, what do you mean?
Just math. You like math.
Like,
I look at math. I'm trying to pick a subject that people say, why do I go to school? Like, why do I have to take math? Some people are like, math is awesome. And I'm like...
Yeah, I think it's really useful. I don't know if it's something I necessarily love, but... You know, with where the game is and everything now, like, you can't play the game without knowing some math. Yeah. So, yeah, math's important.
It's a bad group of people to ask this question to
me. Yeah, right?
Hey, but listen, man, like, you're the one that we always root for you.
I appreciate
part of the family, so thanks, man. Really,
yeah, thank you, man.
Just we talk about different philosophies and different approaches and you know, pitching's an evolving thing. For you, over the past course of this year, and I think I haven't talked to you since spring training, how have you evolved? Like, how have you changed? Or maybe you haven't, and maybe everything has gone as planned, but how has things gone?
I would say doing the things that I do well. If you look at the games that days where I've had better games and better outings, I do the simple things in my mind well, and the ones that I haven't, I don't really do that well. You know, get strike one, get ahead, stay ahead, trying to get guys out as quickly as possible. Which just inevitably leads to strikeouts, the more that you get ahead and the more that you're controlling counts. So just continue to do those things well.
Going to different organizations, I mean, this is kind of a cliche question, but has there been any dramatic difference between the organizations you've been at in the last few years? Different philosophies, approaches? Or?
No, not drastic, just... Each one has just been about getting me back to doing what I need to do best or do what I do well. So it's been good. Really just seeing those things and being told, dude, you know, these are things you did well and you get you back to that. And, you know, once I start doing that, then continuing to do that and improve on that.
One of the things, you know, I talk to guys, obviously, in Tampa is an example, like what happens there, and Dodgers are another one, of like when you hear it from the Dodgers, it might hit different. I don't know if that's, I mean, maybe not, but sometimes the message is very similar, but because they've had success, is that true or?
Well, I think it'd be a different scenario if I didn't go to Detroit and turn things around a lot to where they wanted me. You know, I don't think it would be... I think if the situation, the answer might be a little bit different. Obviously, it helps to hear that, but being able to turn things around in Detroit and make the changes I needed to make there to be able to be in this situation, be in this spot right now was huge. So I think seeing it and seeing it work out from the offseason to spring training, the beginning of the season, through the All-Star break, all through this point has been huge for me. You know, hearing it from the Dodgers has been something, but seeing the changes that I wanted to make and seeing them work out has
been... But it was similar, like the Detroit philosophy or the approach was sort of similar to maybe what they do here, or...
Well, it's just been getting me back to doing the little things right and doing what I do best.
Yeah.
Which is getting ahead, staying ahead, getting strike one, using all my pitches, really just throwing the kitchen sink, and not getting too stuck on one thing or another.
And the last thing is, like, when did that take root for you? Like, when you went to Detroit, obviously you say, okay, you know, they say we like this, we like that, we want to work with you in this way or that way, but really you have to accept and you have to implement it. When for you was it right away in spring training? Or?
Right away. I mean, even in the offseason when we had conversations over some things and what I needed to do and what we kind of saw, and just building off that and taking that and working on it in the offseason and then seeing some success and when I came in and then liking where things were at and just building off that and improving off it. That's kind of where it all just continued on from there.